He was just a short little guy. But that's kind of incidental. That's one of those things where if you zero in on the details, you miss the big picture. Zacchaeus was a guy that was positioned. He was wealthy. He had a lot going on for him. And the reason was, is because, well, frankly, he sold out. He sold out to his own people, to the Jewish nation. Because the oppressors in this picture at the time of Jesus was the Roman government, and they were harsh taskmasters. They did things and said things that were hard and brutal. And so there were wealthy Jewish people that would leverage their wealth, and Zacchaeus was one of them. What he did was he put in a bid to the government, and he said, "I'll be your taxpayer. I'll pay you this much money, and you give me the license to tax people." So here's a guy who has the backing of the Roman government. So he goes to people, and he charges them the tax. He pays the Romans whatever they require, and they've now given him permission to take whatever he wants beyond that. And so tax collectors were hated even more than today. Tax collectors were hated because they were ruthless. Not only did they betray the Jewish people by working for the Roman oppressive government, but then they would extort and steal and could do it legally. There were two kinds of tax collectors. The Gabbai people were people that charged the standard taxes, the property taxes, the income taxes, the poll taxes. They were the ones that would set up a table, and as people would come through, they would collect the money, and that was their job. That was the Gabbai. That was not Zacchaeus. He was a Moki. Now, a Moki is a guy that collected duties on virtually anything. Anything that he could think of. So they taxed people for going on toll roads, for imports into a city, for exports, for bridges, for letters and packages that might be delivered. He would, anything he could think of, he would exercise that tax. And the Moki, there were two types of those guys. There were the great Mokis and there were the little Mokis. The little Mokis were the ones that did that, but did their own dirty work. That was not Zacchaeus either. He was a great Moki. That means he hired the guys. He was so wealthy in the town of Jericho where he worked that he hired the thugs to do his work and paid them a pittance while he brought in big money. He was hated and he didn't care because it was paying off. That was his job. That was his commitment. He made a decision. He realized what the price was, and he paid the price, and it was really working for him. But Jesus' popularity was spreading, and everybody wanted to hear him, see him, and he was no different. But that's when the wee little man thing comes into the picture, because Jesus is walking through town, huge crowds are following him, and he just wants to catch a glimpse. He's just curious. He's like a little kid. He's like you or me that would love to see somebody. He was a name dropper, and he wanted to say, "You know who I saw? I saw the guy." He couldn't see over the crowds, and so he climbs into a tree. He climbs into this tree, and he climbs up high enough, and he thinks that he's looking for Jesus, but the truth is Jesus walks right to his tree and stops, and the truth is Jesus was looking for Zacchaeus. And he looks up and he says, "Zacchaeus," calls him by name, "Zacchaeus, come down. I want to eat at your house today." Well, no self-respecting Jewish rabbi would have anything to do with a tax collector. But Jesus calls him by name and he says, "I want to go to your house." As a matter of fact, the Greek language reveals something even more frightening about Jesus' situation. The word that he's using there is I would feel great comfort in being at your house. He was not just extending some grace and mercy. He was not rolling his eyes and saying, okay, I'm going to spend some time with you, and I hope this does something for you. He says, this would be a blessing to me, and we would have an important moment together if I could eat with you. And so the wee little man climbs down out of the tree, and they go to his house, and he prepares a feast for Jesus. He worked for the oppressor. But there came a moment at which somebody who seemed to know something about what was going on in this crazy world wanted to spend time with him. I don't know if you see yourself as the little person. I don't know if you see yourself as a turncoat on people that are important to you. I don't know if you are a sellout. Here's what I do know. You and I, we both just want to be seen. Not for the show that we put on, not for the mask that we wear, not for this song and dance that we put on so that somebody says, I like you, or I'm okay with you. Oh, it's amazing how we will sell ourselves short and be satisfied with a little bit of applause. But this is a man that looks up and sees him and knows his name and knows his reputation and said, we could be friends. Let me tell you how that story ends. His response after spending the afternoon with Jesus was incredible generosity. Luke 19 says that he says, you know, Jesus, I want to take half of my wealth. Now, would you pause right there? This is a rich guy that has made huge sacrifices to be rich. And all of a sudden, he's saying, half of everything I have, I want to give back to poor. This is huge. This is what happens when somebody spends real time with Jesus. I'm not talking about behaving like a good Christian. I'm not talking about putting on one more song and dance that somehow convinces God that you're an okay person. This is when you spend time with somebody who says, I know who you are and I love you. And so he wants to extend the same mercy that he's received, he wants to pass it on something else to somebody else. And the thing that he has is money. And so he gives half of everything. And he says, and if I've been underhanded with what I've been charging people, that was the reputation, that was his job. He said, if I've done that, I'm going to give it back. I'm going to give back four times what I've taken from people. Okay, this is not a guy that is just so wealthy that he can give away money and it's no big deal. This is a guy who's saying, what I found here is where I find worth, is where I find value. And that stuff is just stuff. And Jesus responds. He says, salvation has come to this house today. I want Jesus to speak those words about me and about mine, Brenda's house. I want to carry my life in such a responsive way to his movement and his words and his tenderness and his compassion. Jesus's generosity to me, so that it's more than me just sharing in communion every week because he said to do this, but it's because I'm now part of the body. I've been changed by the blood. I'm different. I'm not going to do life that way anymore. And Jesus went on to say, the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. We're all just looking to be found, right? We're all just trying to find some place where we fit, some place where we belong. And we're willing to make sacrifices. And we're willing to do whatever we have to cosmetically. But occasionally we have some moment when we realize the masks aren't serving us well. And we just wish that somebody would love us for who we are. So we've talked about NFL players and NFL referees, and we've talked about the job of this tax collector. Let me tell you about Jesus's job. There's something that you can do that makes you feel fulfilled. That's what ministry has been for me. That it makes you feel like I'm made for this. And Jesus was no different. We just heard from Luke chapter 19, verse 10, Jesus saying, I came to seek and save. That's what I do. That's what energizes me. That's what gives me life, is to, well, give you life. That's what I do. We get pretty sad and sorrowful about the crucifixion of Jesus. And it was tragic. It was awful. But the reality is, he walked into death. He invited that. Because that's why he came. He came to seek and to save. Earlier in the book of Luke in chapter 13, Jesus is being confronted by some people that dislike his ministry and how he carries himself. And he says this, you go tell that man, he's talking about Herod, you go tell Herod that I will keep on casting out demons and I will continue to heal people today and tomorrow, and on the third day, I will accomplish my purpose. Herod was intimidated by him. Herod had sent some clear messages saying, if you don't stop, your life's going to get ticklish. And Jesus said, bring it on, because this is what I do. This is what I have to do. I can't do anything else. This fulfills my purpose. In Acts chapter 17, Paul says this. He said, Christ's purpose was for the nations to seek after God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. Though, Paul says, he's not far from any of us. His purpose was to come and find we little men and women. So, what's your job? What about you and me? I'm not asking about your career. I love talking about being a bus driver. I keep retelling the same stories. Bless the hearts of my coworkers and the hearts of my students. I keep saying the same things over and over and over because I just love what I'm doing here and I don't get tired of it. I love ministry and I could tell you youth ministry stories and Renovatu stories until you were asleep, but I could still go because it gives me life and vitality. But it's not just about what do you do to fill your time? Hasn't that been an interesting thing about this COVID virus thing? Staying at home and having time? It's tragic. It's hard. I'm grieved by it all. But I'm also refreshed by my neighbors that I've met. Because we're out there walking. By laughter in the streets of families. My daughter and son-in-law and their three teenage children have all purchased baseball gloves. They bought new mitts that weren't little for kids, that were big for grown-ups, and they've been playing catch, and they've been throwing a football, and they've been doing things together. Brenda and I had to interrupt a table game tonight in order to go to church. I like the play. So let's talk about your job and my job, not your career, not what you do to pay the bills. But Philippians, Paul writes this to a church in Philippi, and he says in verse 27, above all, you must live as citizens of heaven, conducting yourselves in a manner that's worthy of the good news about Christ. He says, then, whether I come to see you again or only hear about you, I know that you are standing together with one spirit and one purpose, battling together for the faith, which is the good news. Paul's saying, what gives your life purpose and meaning is these investments that you've discovered in the kingdom of Christ. Doing stuff that has ripple effects into eternity, that's what's real. But we fill our lives with recreation and with sports and with things that keep us busy and going. It can be relationships that we keep throwing ourselves into, and all of a sudden we were discovering this in this crazy quarantine time that we can't do relationships, and all of a sudden we don't know how to do life. But here's the truth. If you're investing in things that last forever, that gives life purpose and meaning. People took exception to Jesus hanging around with tax collectors. They referred to Zacchaeus as a notorious sinner. And it changed him forever. It renovated him. He became something beautiful as the craftsman reshaped his life, repurposed his life, and told him, here's what's true about you. We, my friends, are notorious sinners. We stand there with every wee little man that put on a good show, that kept playing the game, that kept acting and pretending and hoping people would approve. And the truth is this, when Jesus knows your name, when Jesus looks into your heart, not to see those things that disgust him, not to see those things that break his heart and hopes that you'll change. No, when he looks into your heart, you know what he sees? What he made for you to be. And that changes everything. Every week we talk about generosity. Part of our worship at the Renovatus Church when we meet as a church includes communion every week. It includes worshiping in music and song. We spend time in prayer and we spend time in the Word like we have the last few minutes. But we also include every week offering, and we pass a basket around not to pay the bills, but to remember that, wait, we're the people that have been touched. And so we live generously. That basket that gets passed up and down rows, that's just a symbol of how we're doing life. And we are creatively trying to think of how we can give our money and our time and our abilities to impact people around us, because that's what happens when Jesus changes your life. We're people that, like the church that Paul is writing to in the city of Philippi, we're trying to do life together. We're trying to do life in such a way so the message of Jesus, the good news, really is good news, really is a thing that brings hope and relief and direction and purpose. We are, even though we're not all alike, we are people that stand together. That's what happens when people are seen by Jesus. We're the ones that are fighting for that, because that's worth fighting about. That's worth fighting for. That's a battle worth engaging, reminding people of who they are in Jesus' eyes. We call ourselves the Renovatus Church, but it's less of a title and more of a verb. It's a Latin word for renovation. And our identity is about the presence of Jesus transforming us. As a matter of fact, our phrase that we repeat often that's on every piece of printed information about the Renovatus Church of Christ is that we're being restored to our original purpose and intended beauty. He has something in mind for us. He looks at us and doesn't see the mistakes. He looks at us and sees what we were made for, what he created us for. The craftsman, the artist, doesn't look at you and see the ugliness and the ruined state. He's going, oh, I can do things with notorious sinners. That's how we live our life. We sort of thought that we were going to be inviting people to be renovated. And what we discovered on the way is we're all, every single one of us, being transformed day by day, shaped by His hand. So I want to encourage you to allow it, to carry your life in such a way so that you're saying, okay, God, I don't know what I'm saying, but I want more than this. And so I want to invite you to continue to help me take the next step of being transformed, because, well, that's your job. That's what you were made for. You were made for this. Have a great week. And don't live out of the wounds. Live out of the truth. Who you are in Jesus is who you really are. Live out of this truth that we are being transformed into our original purpose and our intended beauty. Deal with that.